Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one, that's just one, tasty treat? I know that you are. And I know you know that means it's time once again for Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and it is not just Code Delicious today, folks. It's that special segment we all love, near and dear to our hearts and our stomachs. It's time for Culinary CPR with you know who, my special guest. The guy's amazing. You know, he's a good friend of mine, and we've known each other for years now. Onus on me. I'm still waiting to get into his kitchen to be able to cook with him and get these tips that we get each week, hands-on. I'm selfish that way. You know, I'm talking about Chef Luca Paris. He's owner of Luca's Mediterranean Cafe, also owner of the Market at Luca's. It's won innumerable awards, including he won the best chef in all of New Hampshire. You've seen him on TV. He's got his own TV show. You've heard him on the radio. He's got his own radio show. He destroyed the competition on Guy's Grocery Games. So now he pretty much owns Food Network, too. I mean, that's old hat for him. You know him. You love him. We can't cook without him. The one, the only, the inimitable Chef Luca Paris. Chef, welcome to the program once again, my friend. A pleasure to have you on.
What's up, big guy? You crack me up, man. I still to this day, every once in a while I hear that, I'm like, okay, I'm done. I could drop the mic now. I got it all done. Not the Dr. Mic, just the mic. I've done everything.
You know what? No, you're waiting. When that comes, let me know, because for that, you know, I've got to send you out. You know, when you're getting ready to retire from this, and you're like, hey, you know, I've had it with you, Dr. Mike. You know, I've given you enough goodies. I'm out. I'm on the big time. You got to let me know, because I've got to give you the WWE. Introduce you. Are you ready to cook?
Well, let's just put it this way, Mike. I'm never going to be done with you. I don't know. I think we should be doing this more and more often. But I love talking food with you. It's always a lot of fun. We get to it. One of the things, and I hope our audience feels this from their side, but I got to tell you what I get when I get to talk to you is that, you know, you'll ask me for recipes and I'll give you recipes, and half the time, and I know people have heard me talk about this, but half the time you'll come up with the reasons why this is healthy, and I'll be like, oh, I didn't even know I was doing that. But there are, and when I'm not doing it, you know, healthy enough, you find some way to tweak it a little bit, and then I get to use that in the kitchen again and go, wow, it still tastes great, and I feel better about it. But it's a really nice collaboration, and the fact that you know food so well, and I don't know if people understand this, is you come from both angles of two amazing career paths or you know, expertises, where you kind of bring them both together. Nobody can do that like you can. There are doctors that will tell you what you need to do to stay healthy. There are chefs that will tell you what to do to eat really good. Well, good. And there are English teachers that will teach me English. But between the two of those, man, you bring them together every day. So when I look at a recipe you've made, and I go, well, why am I just not doing that? Or, you know, a book like Fallacy of the Calorie. You know, your first, just the opening chapter. If someone hasn't gotten this book, now this is, that's two books ago now, right? Fallacy was?
H&E's the latest one, yeah.
And so if you haven't gotten a chance to read Fallacy of the Calorie, what was great about that book is the way you opened it up, and you just said, okay, all these people were telling you to do this, do that, just everybody shut up and just listen to me. And I did. I was sitting there going, I'll do anything you tell me. And this is, and it's incredible, because you bring a lot of this knowledge from the health side into the food, but you don't make us feel like we can't eat. And you having me on and being able to talk about food with you has always been a lot of fun. I mean, we've been doing this for, I don't know, almost close to 10 years now. We've been talking to each other on the radio and that kind of stuff, and we're talking about food. And I just think it's a blast to share, you know, these half hours with you and then talk about this food. So, all right, I've done my...
I really appreciate that. That actually means a lot to me, coming from you. And you know, I think it's because we share the passion of the food experience. I think for both of us, you know, it's and that's what irritates me, and you know, really gets me wanting to get out there is, you know, so many people who come from a health background want to tell the folks what they can't have, or that you can only have this, or, you know, a lot of times it's a little disingenuous where people are making a buck, you know, trying to sell you, you know, a miracle food that, you know, is absolutely horrible. Or you can get the same thing, you know, from eating, you know, some delicious creation that you made, chef. And you're supplying all these things. I mean, you know, food has gotten us to the top of the food chain, if you will, you know, for a reason. So everything we need, you know, I'm a simple guy. Nature has for us out there. We just have to be smart enough to be able to look in the right places and to put it together in a way that also, you know, enhances the human experience. And so often I find that's what's missing from, you know, modern healthcare or modern healthy, you know, and I'm doing air quotes, folks, healthy, you know, approaches to stuff is that it lacks the human element. And, you know, we've got to have that subjective stuff in there. You've got to have stuff that tastes good. You know, you and I were talking, right? You know, and you'll probably never look at polenta, you know, the same way again after you shared that thing with your mom, you know, in the kitchen.
Right.
And so now when you and her sit down and share polenta, it's got a special meaning. And
yeah.
And that, you know, that's food of love. And what we're finding out, and that's what my new book that'll be coming out that I'm working on, that, and one reason I'm so excited about it, I call it Food Shaman. Because it goes beyond just food and health, and it's about really incorporating, you know, what you do in the kitchen, chef, which is crafts these wonderful food experiences for folks. And it's that whole experience that we're finding, that mindfulness of eating, who you eat it with, not just even what we eat anymore, but how we eat. And all of these, you know, feedback either positively, and they improve our lives, and by doing so, improve our health and our wellness, or, you know, on the downside, they don't, you know, and I see that so often as I travel around the country and, you know, in the world, when I'm sitting in airports and I see, you know, depressed, distraught people, you know, using their Cinnabon as a carry-on, and a comfort pillow, you know, that you kind of lay your head on and also eat as you drool into it and you sleep on the plane, you know, so it's a great visual, isn't it?
You know, so that's exactly what happens.
You know, so these are very, very important things. And I'm just delighted to be at a time, you know, in history, in medical history, in food history, you know, where we're starting to meld that science and evolve. And to evolve, we can't ignore what we did in the past. We have to incorporate it. It's like a great recipe, right? I mean, I've never created a great recipe. If I, you know, I may have some insights, but I'm building on to what others have done before. I don't take credit for any original recipe
right.
whatsoever.
And, well, I think that I really don't think there is. I mean, there are these upper echelons in the restaurant and food industry and food business that there are some people that are actually doing new things with new techniques, but you're always building on what's happened before. It doesn't just happen. You know, almost everything's been done, I think, right? We could actually say that.
You know, I think so. You know, I find that so much of, you know, what we're discovering, whether it's in the kitchen or it's in the laboratory, you know, I had this conversation not long ago with a professor down at Baylor who's doing research with curcumin and cancer and for cancer prevention. And for folks who don't know, curcumin is the active ingredient that we find in turmeric, which is basically an Asian or Indian spice. And we'll, if you've ever cooked within the kitchen, it will stain everything you own yellow for like forever. You know, and he was laughing because he said, you know, even within his realm of really smart cancer researching docs, they're like, oh, you know, oh my God, you know, curcumin, you know, it's this new thing. And he's like, new thing. They've been using this for health benefits in India for like 6,000 years.
Right.
And, you know, he had to just kind of shake his head. So, Yeah, I am with you. I think there's nothing new under the sun. Certainly, I'm not smart enough to come up with stuff new, you know, but I am smart enough to pay attention to people who are smarter than me.
Right.
And,
well, that's and that's
why I have you on the show.
listen, if we quote enough smart stuff from other people, all of a sudden we sound like we know what we're doing. I think that's the only way to do it.
I think so. And you, I mean, you talk about, you know, a great healthful recipe. You brought one for us today that I would say is sort of a Mediterranean classic, you know, is a standard, you know, fare. It's a pan-seared red snapper. But you know, when we pay attention and we source like a chef and we source correctly and get the quality ingredients, you know, this is going to be a powerhouse of nutrition, you know, when I have my white jacket and my stethoscope on, and you're going to tell me and share with the listeners how to make it, you know, an absolutely delicious, scrumptious, easy to prepare meal from the chef's perspective.
Well, I think when we talk about fish, there's two things that come up with this. And I know we've talked about cooking fish with the skin. I love the skin on the fish, and something like a red snapper allows you to have incredibly crispy, wonderful fries, everything, to a fish dish that's very simple to put together. It's just about the process that you need to go through to learn how to crisp up the skin. Now, snapper itself, you know, and you being from Florida know that some of the finest red snapper in this nation comes from down there in the Florida waters. It's fine textured white meat. This snapper could go with anything. You could do a snapper livornese, which you could put tomatoes and olives, capers, and you could have these heavy spices, put it on top, or you can make it just a quick butter sauce with a little bit of lemon and maybe a hint of balsamic, just kind of give it a little more tartness to it. So you could do a little bit of everything to it. Today's recipe is it's about talking about searing the skin and cooking that correctly and cooking the fish. But it's also about taking something as simple as parsnips, spinach, some garlic, heavy cream, some milk, cooking that all down and making this puree that goes under the fish. So it's also a contrast color. So when they see the color of this dish, in the picture that you're going to have for the newsletter, it just pops, and you look at it, it's bright, it's vibrant. You know, I've done this too with parsnips and sweet peas, or you just do a pea puree or a pea pesto kind of thing. So you could do a lot of things. It's just about, you know, spring kind of coming out and jumping out at you, and I want to throw some spring colors on the plate. Now you did
because when I looked at that, the first thing I thought about is, man, this dish on the plate reminds me of spring, because you had that beautiful, you know, golden pan-seared snapper and these vibrant greens. And so, you know, folks, if you're at your farmer's market and they have some tremendous fresh greens, you know, go with those and you know, be a chef and use that in your puree. Don't go buy some old frozen spinach just because it called for spinach in the recipe. You know, be a chef, not a collector of recipes. And that's what I got when I looked at this. I was like, man, get you some fresh snapper. And then see what's, you know, blooming literally, you know, in your neck of the woods, and whatever's, you know, green and vibrant and, you know, going to be cheap because it's, they're harvesting it. That's right. What I'm using for the puree.
Right. And then, you know, and we're serving now that, you know, springtime's in our neck of the woods right now while we're talking about this, you know, soon the asparagus is going to be out in full bloom and they're going to be like crazy beautiful. And then, I love peas and asparagus and everything I could find at this time of year.
Oh, this time of year, you know, yeah.
It's absolutely wonderful. But a fish like this goes with anything at any time. And if you're lucky enough to be down in Florida and get fresh snapper right out of the, you know, someone's pier, or you're able to get it right away, get it when you can. I don't necessarily have that luxury, but you still source as well as you can. Find good, reputable people that are selling the fish to you. I think the most important thing when we talk about fish, we've talked about it with finding where your salmon comes from. If it's not a wild caught salmon and it doesn't have a distinction. We talk about it with the trout. We talk about it with all your fish. Is get to know your fishmonger and say to them, whether they're in a big supermarket or they're a small locally owned place, get to know them, become friendly with them, and show some knowledge. Go online, learn about the fish, and show that you're interested in the best quality, where it comes from, how it's done. So if it is aquacultured, there's a process of aquaculturing or farm raising, and it basically is the term, is they're doing it right. And they're doing it sustainably, and it's no different than farming and foraging. You know, so you're not going to get a wild snapper. But if you're going to get a farm raised, make sure it's good. Go for wild first, get the best quality. That makes all the difference in the world.
It does, and I think this dish, and you correct me because if I'm wrong here, but again, you just mentioned some other things that would be lovely with it. If you've got some fresh trout, you could pan sear that up. If you've got, you know, hogfish in your neck of the woods, that's one. And you know, a lot of times, you know, when I'm looking for snapper, I do just what you said. I talk to my fishmonger, and you know, red snapper maybe because everybody knows red snapper, and restaurants want red snapper to put on your menu because guys like you, Luca, are buying it up. I can't afford red snapper, but I might be able to get, you know, another type of snapper, you know, that's one third of the price and it'll cook up and be, you know, just as delicious. So that's a reason, to source and follow all the things that you just said. Absolutely. You know, no, spot on. And whatever you get, you want to get that, as you were saying, that really delicious crisp skin. So how do we do that?
So the most important thing, let's talk about the skin, and I'm going to give credit. We talked about stealing recipes. I actually didn't come up with this preparation or that picture. That was from my sous chef, Darren Morse, and I love giving out the credit to my team when they do it, because I was like, he was like, Luca, I want to make this. And I was like, yes, you are. I mean, it was a simple dish, so I was like, yeah, this is what I love it. It's going to look great. And so I always give credit where credit's due. He's part of my team, and he does a great job. So
you are awesome. Shout out to you, Darren.
Yeah, there you go. So I think the most important thing is where we start with the fish. We've talked about this before. Anytime you have any type of protein, the first thing you want to have is dry skin. All right? So you do not want the everyone says, well, I've tried to do this crispy skinned fish like you told me to, but every time I do it, the skin sticks to the pan and I can't, you know, it's either not hot enough or whatever. But it's really two things. Either your pan wasn't hot enough or the skin isn't dry. So you want to pat your skin.
I'm going to add a third, and I know you're going to back me on this, because the third one I think is probably the most common, which is whoever's cooking has no patience.
Oh my gosh, leave it alone.
You can't, once you put it in the pan, folks, put your hands in the air, step away from the range top, from the stove, and go do something else and let it finish. Because invariably you sit there and you're like, is it done yet? Is it crisp yet? And you start to like, and then it all just falls apart.
So start with a heavy, exactly, man. And start with a heavy bottom pan, you know, something that could handle good heat. You put it on medium high heat for several minutes before you even start cooking. And what's great, cast iron pans work great for this. But if I have pretty much, you know, my I call them the kitchen pans. They're not stainless, but they're just a really good, strong steel pan that I can put on heat. And then using, people have them, the nonstick pans. It doesn't guarantee that they won't stick. It doesn't guarantee they won't stick. Or it will guarantee they won't stick to the pan, but you're never going to get that brown, crispy, beautiful skin.
Another important thing about those nonsticks, and we learned this from Teflon, is that when you heat them high, when we want to burn this, you can actually create carcinogenic compounds.
Exactly.
And I don't want to be an alarmist, because this doesn't necessarily apply to all stainless and some of the newer stainless and ceramics that are out there. But it is, we got to be careful, particularly if it's like PTFE, which is a poly tetrafluorinated carbon type compound. So we want to be careful about that. And like you, that's why I don't use the chemically coated nonsticks, because when you want to get a good sear like this and you got to go to a high temperature, these are not the pans that you want. So I'm in your camp with a, you know, standard, like a cast iron kind of thing.
I love cast irons. I mean, I have my mother-in-law's cast iron set, and I get to use it all the time. So you have your heavy bottom pan, you're going to get it nice and hot, you dried the skin, you've seasoned it, you've actually, and then you want to, with the cast iron it would be less, but let's stick with a really good stainless steel pan that you're getting warm. You want to coat with oil, but you don't want it to be where you're frying it. You want a nice even coating in the pan, and it should be just about smoking when you're adding the fish. Now, this is the big key to it. Once you add the fish to the pan, it's skin side down, and then right away your proteins are going to start to contract, and the fillet will almost want to curve. There's a couple ways to stop this by doing scoring the skin. It depends on the fish. There are some. I don't score snapper personally. I like to keep it one crispy piece. I don't score my salmon. I don't score my trout. I like to leave them. There are some fish that curl up so much that you have to score, and that's the process of just slightly cutting into the skin, but not breaking into the flesh. And it's easier to do when you're, let's say, doing duck and you want to render it with the fat and not cutting into the meat. But unless you're really good at it, sometimes you're just breaking the skin apart and it's going to just fall apart on you. So I like to, with snapper, I don't do it. What I do is I get it into this pan skin side down, and as the proteins contract, I like to just push it down with my spatula, flexible spatula, press the flesh until it stays flattened out. It's just a matter of seconds. And then it ensures that the skin is going to be touching the pan and give you the results you want. Now, you have this fish cooked. Now, this is where you hit it right on the head when you said, leave it alone. Don't flip it back and forth. Don't try and get your spatula to make sure. It'll tell you when it's ready. And I know it sounds silly because you're like, what, it's going to talk to you? No, it starts releasing.
Yes, it does.
It's amazing, right? Because once you get used to it, you actually could see it start releasing. And then the oil and the connection to the oil and the meat itself or the skin itself starts almost having a different sound, where you could almost hear the difference of when it's ready to flip. Now, not everyone's going to be, oh my, what are you, a fish whisperer? No, I'm not a fish whisperer. I've done it enough times that you feel it, you see it, and you'll start seeing the edges ready to come up. Once you get used to when that is, you're only flipping this once, and a lot of times I'll sear, and make sure that that's happening, and I'll add a pat of butter while that's happening into the pan, some fresh herbs, and then basically coat the top of the fish. So it's kind of
beautiful.
I'm coating the fish and cooking the fish at the same time on top. I do it especially with trout because they're so thin. Sometimes the snapper, I need to flip over and get a little more cook on that side, or I'll finish it in the oven. But now you've created almost a little sauce in and of itself with the fish itself, the seasonings that you put on the fish, maybe some fresh herbs, maybe some butter. And you don't have to do another single thing. And then when it's ready, you're going to know it. It'll slide right out and go right onto your plate. Nothing will be stuck in the pan. You'll love this. You'll have this beautiful crisp skin. So I like to actually serve it with the meat side down, the crispy skin showing, and that's what's in that picture. You have it that way. And people absolutely love it. It's one of the best things we've done here in a long time. And we make some pretty good food, I got to tell you. And I'm pretty excited about this one.
You make some killer food, and one of the things I love about this dish too, it really lets the flavor of and the taste and the texture of this wonderful, you know, gift from the ocean shine, and so folks, what you want to avoid doing is letting it overcook, because you know. For me, that fillet is done when that fish just starts to flake away. And you'll see it, you know, when you put the fish in the pan, the flesh is kind of that whitish gray. and then it'll kind of turn that white. And I do a lot of what you're doing. When I have those thin fillets, I do exactly the same thing, just kind of spoon it over. Mm-hmm. So there's hot oils, those hot fats are now cooking it from the top. The same way, you know, I do a sunny side up egg.
Perfect.
So that I don't have that uncooked gelatinous mass around the yolk. And I just kind of put that pat of butter in, and then I'm spooning it over. And I picked that up years ago reading a cookbook from Marcus Waring, who ran Gordon Ramsay's restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a great little book out, How to Cook the Perfect ... And he goes through a bunch of things, and one of those were eggs. And it's a very old book, because I'm very old. But the technique is really timeless. And when you see, you know, that flesh turn that kind of uniform white and just start to flake away, man, get it off the heat. That baby is ready.
Yeah. And there's really nothing better than a perfectly cooked fish. And, you know, all these people that spend the time turning their broiler on, putting the fish in the broiler, and, you know, worrying about if they're overcooking it or not in there. You did it in the pan, and literally, I mean, you know how long this takes. This is, we're not talking about more of a 10-minute process. That's on the long end if you're taking your time. We could have these snappers to a plate in no time, and that's what makes it so amazing.
Yeah, and this is such a great springtime summer food. I mean, it's light. You're utilizing, you know, fresh bounty from the sea, or, you know, as you said earlier, whatever we can get in, mm-hmm. whether it, you know, be sustainably sourced, you know, trout, salmon, whatever. And then, you know, what's great is you can make this meal in the spring with the vegetables and purees you get from the farmer's market.
Right.
Make it later in the summer. It's going to be completely different with a whole new round of bounty. And then in the early fall with that last bit of harvest, you know, coming off, you're going to get a third iteration on this. And they're going to be three completely different meals, all absolutely fantastic. And,
yeah, I like
and that's the genius
summer,
of you, Chef.
I like the summertime to take some fresh tomatoes and just some fresh herbs. Toss it into like a little marinade and put it on cold. Just that, I mean, something as simple as that, and maybe a little bit of lemon juice, and all of a sudden you have this bright, vibrant dish. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do with these wonderful fish. So, and then the only other thing that we haven't talked about real quick is the parsnips. So here's how easy it can be. It's about a pound of parsnips that are thinly sliced, right? A pound of fresh baby spinach, or if you want to get fresh peas or anything like that, garlic cloves, heavy cream, milk, butter, unsalted butter and salt. And basically you take all of that in a pan. You're not blanching off the parsnips, then pureeing them and add stuff. You're taking the milk, the cream, the garlic, the boil, and the butter all in a pan. Everything stays in there. You're not losing any of the great parts of the parsnips or the spinach. You don't have to drain anything out. And you're just going to cook them for 10 or 15 minutes till the parsnips gets really soft. And the smaller you cut them, the quicker they're going to cook. At the end of that, you uncover, you add the spinach, cook until liquid's reduced a little bit more, another about 5 minutes. Add some salt, puree this in a blender till it's smooth. You want to get that right consistency, almost basically a puree. You don't want it to fall apart like a soup on your on your plate, but it's like a spread, or think of nice loose mashed potatoes. And when you see the picture, that's when you get an idea of just how beautiful it is, because you put it on the plate, you stretch it out just a little bit, put the fish on top, bam, this is an easy, easy dish that, you know, I get to get kudos for in the restaurant, but you could do at home and knock people's socks off when they come over.
And the only thing better than the picture is the taste.
It's wonderful.
Folks, you can let me know how it is, chefdrmike.com, Luca at Chef Luca Paris, lucaparis.com, excuse me. You can follow him at Chef Luca on Twitter. And until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.